It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host, bringing you the best of golf and golf lifestyle. It's a very special week in golf this week. We have the 150th version of the British Open, the Open Championship, taking place at the Old Course in St. Andrews, Scotland, the home of golf. It is just goosebumps, wall-to-wall, back-to-back, start-to-finish, in watching this event. It's been spectacular so far on the course. It's been just spectacular off the course. I am a little bitter that I'm not there. I really wanted to be there, but because of everything that happened during the pandemic and so many moving parts, I wasn't able to be there. But just to be able to watch it and experience on TV even, it seems like a privilege. I bet you feel the same way too. Talk a little bit about what goes on in Lynx Golf and why I think Lynx Golf is the definitive version or brand of golf, why it makes it so special, and in short, why Lynx Golf is like life. That's why people appreciate it so much. It's a special thing, so I want to give you my take on what makes it special. We're watching Tiger Woods at this point, where you are at this point. I'm sure by the time you listen to this, you'll realize that Tiger did not make the weekend. He displayed such courage, such grit and tenacity. I really haven't seen that in this sport. You see it in other sports, certainly the contact sports. You see it in football players who will power through injury to try to achieve, to try to contribute, to do anything they can to get across the goal line. And that's the same thing that Tiger showed at St. Andrews this week. It was just mind-boggling to see him try to deal with the pain, to try to take all that preparation and to have it beat back all that adversity that he had faced with his injuries. And it didn't quite get him there in terms of getting to the weekend. But I think it's almost, in a way, a merciful situation, because I don't want to see him playing golf that does more damage to his body. He's one of a kind, to say. He's just one of a kind. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in the next segment, too. My guest this week is going to be a guy who's going to talk a little bit about the boom in golf and how that's affecting some of the membership clubs in the world. That's my good friend Tyler Vandermeulen. He's of Capstone Hospitality. He's experienced, he's knowledgeable, and he's going to drop some of that knowledge on you/us this week, and talking about how clubs are recruiting and retaining new membership when they went from a situation where there were deficits in club membership and now there's lines out the door. So what do we do with that? How do we make that right for the business and right for the customer? Again, going to be a great show. So take a quick break right now. Go get yourself a beverage and a crunchy snack. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about why Lynx Golf is golf. All right? All right. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. And as we talked about before, the British Open, the Open Championship, is being held at St. Andrews, Scotland, the Old Course, the home of golf. They have grass that's 500 years old there. Enough said. Okay. It's a course that wasn't built. It was discovered. It was massaged slightly over the years by a couple of people. Old Tom Morris being one of them, Martin Hawtrey being the other. But essentially, it is the same golf course that Queen Mary I played. It's astonishing to think about that. That is the age, that is the depth and the range of that course. That's how long it's been around. It's just ridiculous to think about that. But Lynx Golf really is something special. You know, everybody, I think who watches major championship golf has a thought about what their favorite major is. And it's so close for me that every time I watch one of the majors, I think, well, maybe that's my favorite one. And to be honest, it usually rotates between the Open Championship, the U.S. Open, and the Masters. The PGA Championship, with its new slot on the calendar, is working its way up there in terms of prestige and impact. And I think it's one of the best things that golf has done over the course of the last generation, is getting that thing into its rightful place on the calendar in May. It opens up so much for that event. But for now, the top three for me are, again, the Open Championship, U.S. Open, and the Masters. And when you see the Masters, you see the traditions, and you see that course, which is, I think it's the definitive golf course, the original DNA for golf courses across America. That's what people think about when they think about golf. It's the layout of it, the majesty of it, the traditions of it. Some of those traditions are not so great, but I think the good outweighs the bad, clearly. It's a very special place, and it's the only major that takes place on the same stage every year. So that's why it has sort of this special feeling for me. So when I see the Masters, I think, okay, yeah, the Masters, that's my favorite one. And then you get to the U.S. Open, and it goes to these tracks that are set up to be the ultimate test for these golfers. And it's kind of like watching a NASCAR race. You know, these guys go around at high speeds, top speeds, pushing their equipment and themselves to the limit. And every once in a while, there's a fiery car crash. And that's sort of what the U.S. Open is to me. I enjoy watching those guys struggle with those setups. I mean, you have some players who think, you know, it's too difficult and fans like to see birdies. No, fans like to see a winner. Like to see somebody win. Like see somebody come out and play better than the other guys. And watching them struggle, watching them have to deal with the physical and the mental aspect of not having something be perfectly set up for them to set records and birdies, okay, that's fine with me. That's perfectly fine. I kind of love it. And my boy John Bodenhammer is doing an extraordinary job in setting these courses up now over the course of the last 2 years. I love mini-me, Mike Davis, too. He did a fantastic job. I love what he did. Bodenhammer, I think, is taking it to the next level. And the venues, I was there for the entire week for the for the U.S. Open this year at the Country Club at Brookline. Fantastic track. I mean, just as pure as it can get for American golf. Just beautiful, challenging. Every type of hole, every type of club gets used. It requires your imagination. And the venue just delivered, and it produced a great finish and a great champion in Matthew Fitzpatrick. The U.S. Open, again, for as majestic as it is, sort of that quintessential test of American ingenuity, American fighting spirit, those things when you think about, like, quintessentially American, you know, that's what you kind of get in the U.S. Open. And so then you think about the Open Championship. And it's creeping up there to be my favorite overall because it's generally played on Lynx golf. And I think Lynx golf is golf. Now, I don't know how many have you had the opportunity to play Lynx golf. And let's say the purists would say that Lynx golf has to be specifically on a seaside course that has a sandy base and golf that's affected by the wind. It should be a seaside links. That's what literally it means. And links golf has certain characteristics, of course. It has that firm land that gives lots of rollout. It's undulating because the course it's a living, breathing thing. Those links courses are always changing. They're subject to the elements and have been forever. So a course that you played or that somebody played 50 years ago is not the same course now. In fact, the course that somebody played 10 years ago, a Lynx golf course, is not the same. It's been affected. Things are growing. The land is shifting. Maybe the fairway is a couple feet closer on one side or the other, or that drop off into the ocean is a little bit closer because that natural erosion that's taken place. Lynx golf courses are living things. are active, and you can sort of feel that motion and how it affects your golf ball. It's almost like it's in motion. It's the ball is moving on something that is living and breathing. And Lynx golf courses are places where you have to know where you're going and what you're doing. And even if you do, you may not get the result you want. It's about not necessarily like an American golf course. It's about the air game. It's about precision. It's about having the right number, hitting it the right number, passing a test. And if you do that, you'll get a good result. But I think, you know, when you take like the typical American parkland golf course that, again, hit it through the trees, you must hit it straight, must hit it far, must hit it high, must be able to get to this number. It's about knowing what each one of your tools does and being able to do that thing with that thing purely and precisely. And that's great, and that's wonderful. Many golf courses like that, you can think of, you know, the most golf courses that set up for that sort of American ethos of golf. Lynx golf is completely different. While American golf or parkland golf is played in the air, Lynx golf is played on the ground. And there are so many different things that can happen to your ball when you hit it. It's very unpredictable. And I think that's why Lynx golf is like life. That's always what I tell people. Lynx golf is more like life than any other type of golf course. People make that comparison about golf is like life. Well, Lynx golf is like life, especially when you compare it to American style golf. So you look at an American golf course where you hit it to this spot, you hit it to that spot, you make your putt, you go in, you know, bravo, cheers. And, you know, that's sort of the mythology of how life should be, right? If you do the right thing, you can hit it this number, you can hit it this far. And if you can't hit it this far, let's get some equipment that can get you another 10 yards so you can hit it that far, and then another club will help you hit it close. It's about the combination of equipment and practice and being able to do a certain type of repetition. Acquire a skill, acquire the equipment, work hard to repeat, and you'll be able to do well. And that's just great. I love that thing, and that remains a challenge. I'm not saying that's easy. I'm just saying that's a particular thing. That's how we want life to be, in my mind. You know, it's attainable. We can achieve perfection. Lynx golf has none of that. It's not about perfection, and it never has been. Lynx golf is rolling. It's undulating. It's unpredictable. That same golf course, that same one particular hole could play one way for you, and for the group behind you, if the wind changes, it can be completely different. It can be an easy hole for you. It can be a hard cut for the people who come right behind you. Same thing for you. The hole coming up, you know, played very easy for the group, but now the wind changes and all of a sudden it's hard for you. That's like life. You know, the same situation doesn't affect people the same way. You get to the same place in life and the circumstances may determine whether it's easy or difficult. And it has nothing to do with you or whether you're a good person or whether you're skilled or not. It's just how it is. And you get to the situation where you hit a ball, you know, you're looking out at a Lynx course and sometimes you don't even know where to go. You can't even see it. You have to have somebody tell you, a caddy, somebody who has information and experience to tell you, you know, hit it over there. You may think that you want to hit it over there at the flag, but nah, you don't want to do that. You want to hit it over there. That's where your target line is. You know, you need somebody who's been there before who can help you through. That's like life, isn't it? And then you execute. You hit it where that guy says you should hit it. And it takes a hop and it hits a wrinkle, a bump or a hill or a gully. And all of a sudden it ends up in not such a good place. Your playing partner hits a shot, lands 3 inches from where you hit it, but it hits another little ridge or wrinkle and ends up perfectly. It isn't that like life, right? I mean, you think that you've done the right thing and sometimes it doesn't end up with a good result, but that's life. And what do? You go find your ball, you line it up, and you hit it again. You keep going. You don't argue and complain and fuss. You just keep going. You just keep going. And you play it like it lies. You accept that different things happen, different outcomes can happen, regardless of the quality of your effort. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. The other thing that I love about Lynx Golf and why I think it's like life is because it's democratic. There's a lot of different ways to get it through the hole. There's a lot of different ways to get it done. And, you know, I've been on Lynx Golf courses where you're 75 yards out and one guy takes a wedge, gets it to 10 feet. The other guy takes a 7-iron, bump and run, get it to 10 feet. And you're playing somebody who's 85 years old. He putts the ball from 70 yards out and gets it to 2 feet. And he's just laughing as he walks up using that putter as a walking stick to get him up to the hole. It's democratic in its most purest sense. It gives you, egalitarian is a better word. It gives you, everybody, an opportunity to do it the way they think they can get it done. Okay, not the way you, there's not only one way to do it. I think of the Parkland or American style courses more as pass fail tests. Though these par threes, a long par three over water, you know, to a back pin. Now either you have that shot or you don't. Either you can clear that water or you can't. It's a pass fail. Do you have it? Yes or no? And that's it. And that's fine, because then you have to work on it or choose a different starting point. You can play a tee forward. But with Lynx Golf, it's more, those holes, they're not pass fail. They're more essay questions or multiple choice. I'll say they're essay questions. You know, you can answer that question with your own words, in your own style, with your own means to get to a correct answer. And that's how I want life to be. That different people can do it different ways and still get to yes, still get to correct. Yes, that gets it done. That's awesome. There should be more than one way to do it. I love that. My dear, dear friend who passed away, Mark Parsonen, a genius, really, just a genius of a man, and the spirit of an angel. Mark Parsonen, who built Granite Bay golf course in Sacramento. He also built King's Barns right there in St. Andrews. And he also built Castle Stewart in Scotland. Some of the best golf courses in the world. And this is a guy who took that thing up when he was in his 50s, I believe, and started with building golf courses. A genius and a lovely man. And we became so close. He was like my brother. He sadly and suddenly passed away a few years ago. But we would talk about golf courses, and we would talk about courses being Protestant courses or Catholic courses, and we sort of split them up into those categories. And let me explain before I get a barrage of emails talking about any type of prejudice or anything. The way we would do that is because of the way, the characteristics of certain courses. So let's take St. Andrews, where even on the very first hole, Mark would talk about it as, he lived there for a long time and played that course dozens of times. And he would talk about how St. Andrews was a place where, especially on the first hole, great example, you could hit it 70, 80 yards offline. Okay. And there's hardly a golf course in the world where you get the ball 70 yards offline and still have a chance. But that first hole at St. Andrews, 70 yards, it's a bad shot, but you take a look at it, you apologize, ask forgiveness, hit your second shot, and you can still make par. You can still get it done, okay? There's a way to ask for forgiveness, say your Hail Mary, and still, you can seek salvation. And then we talked about Protestant courses, like Carnoustie being a prime example. Carnoustie, widely acknowledged along with Oakmont as being the toughest golf courses in the world. You go to Carnoustie, and Carnoustie, you hit the ball 1 yard in the wrong place and you're in hell. And you're staying in hell, and you're going to be in hell until maybe you get to the next hole. Okay. It's penal in the extreme. It's instant and firm punishment for wrongdoing. And we just had some fun with it. Others may have characterized those things in different ways, but we would put these courses in different categories. Again, just another way that golf is like, Lynx Golf is like life. And the two different ways to approach it. Look, I love all golf, and I love all golf courses. And I love the fact that you have link-style golf courses here in the United States now. Bandon Dunes, the original Bandon Dunes course, is a place where if you woke up in the morning and you found yourself on the first tee, you might think, you would have no reason to believe that you weren't in Ireland or Scotland, but for the accents of the people who are talking to you. It is pure links golf. There is links style golf at Stream Song. There's in Florida, there's links style golf at one of my favorites, Sutton Bay in South Dakota. If you haven't heard of that one or haven't seen that one, take a look because it's pretty special. There's a lot of links style golf. Of course, Whistling Straits is links style. A lot of it. And I said to anybody, avail yourself of that. Go to Scotland. Go to Ireland. Ireland is so special for the golf that it has. Scotland, there's so many great links golf courses. You don't have to just go to St. Andrews. You can go, I mean, you can't swing a 7-iron without hitting like a golf course that's the 13th oldest golf course in the world or 9th oldest golf course in the world. And they're all spectacular. Know your history. You'll see James Braid courses, one of the best designers of golf courses. And I say in Scotland with Lynx Golf is best discoverers of golf courses. They just route them. The holes are out there. These guys who are the golf designers over there for that generation, they just routed them. Like here's where the green should be. Here's where the tee should be. But there's the undulations are natural. The bunkers are natural. They were literally dug out by sheep because that's where they wanted to protect themselves where they sleep. That's why the bunkers are so deep. Somebody has to sleep there. It's just a different type of thing and a different type of way of looking at things, where things, you deal with the things as they come and as they are. It's pure. It's natural. With Lynx courses, because of that sandy base that goes so far down, there's hardly anything else that you could put there because it would fall into the ocean. So Lynx golf courses belong there quite naturally. That's where they should be. Because there's nothing else that could be there or should be there. I know this is getting sort of like a poem or an ode, but that's how I feel about Lynx golf. And that's why I'm really glad now that the Open Championship is the last one of the major championships, because it's a reminder on the schedule of the fact that, you know, you have, you know, the Masters at the beginning, the U.S. Open, you have these different tournaments that take place in the United States. But when we end the golf year, when we end the major season, it ends at the home of golf. It ends in Scotland or Ireland, on these courses and these places where the game was discovered and where the game, I think, was perfected and how it can be played by anyone. We say it's a game of life, a game for life, and a game for everyone. And when you play links golf and play in a links golf course, you see that to be true. It is absolutely true. Anyone can play it almost any kind of way. You can get around these courses with a putter if you wanted to. You absolutely could. And I think that's why when I watch these courses and I watch these things, people say they're not green, they're not beautiful. They're beautiful. They're stunningly beautiful because of the experience. You know, just like life. It's not Disney. You know, it's not constructed. It's not fake. It's been constructed by a long list of lives that have been lived on these golf courses and have experienced these golf courses. And I guess as I finish, you know, I think about Tiger walking up the fairway on 18 for his second round, the finish of his second round of this year's Open. He didn't make the cut, but he talked about it afterwards, and I recorded on my Twitter account and posted that the outpouring from the stands as he was walking up the fairway broke him down. He was in tears walking up the fairway. You don't see that from Tiger. That's not who he is generally. And you know, I could imagine myself hearing in the crowd, you know, the cheers and the applause of not only the fans that were there and the tips of the cap that were given to Rory McIlroy and JT as they crossed up the other fairway so symbolically. They're going up number one as Tiger's coming down 18. I could hear old Tom Morris. I could hear Bobby Jones. I could hear Ben Hogan. You could hear the ghosts of all the greats who've ever been there, who've ever walked on that 500-year-old grass and experienced what Tiger experienced, because they knew and they felt it. And to have a player for the ages be recognized as such while he's still on the right side of the flowers, to have anyone, to have any of us still be recognized for who we are and what we've done while we are still here, well, that's one of the best things that can happen in this life, isn't it? And we saw it happen at Tiger, and we saw it happen at St. Andrews, and that's no accident. It's a special thing, and Lynx golf is like life, at least how I like life to be. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with my good friend Tyler Vandermeulen talking about how membership golf is exploding and what he's doing to make sure that it stays that way. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. And as we have said on this show and many other places, many, many other times, there is a boom in golf that was precipitated by a calamity, a catastrophe, aka the COVID pandemic. There wasn't much that people could do reasonably and safely during a long period of time, but golf was one of those things. And a lot of people came to the game, or rediscovered the game during that period, and it looks like they're going to be here at least for a little while. Now, every type of golf facility experienced a boom, and that's everything from mini golf, golf and top golf to private clubs, municipals. Everybody experienced a boom, but it was particularly interesting to me how much the private facilities, membership facilities, had experienced a run on the places that were that went available for quite a long time. If you look at a low in 2008 in that recession, where people were literally giving away memberships at some clubs just to fill the rosters and keep jobs, keep people in work at these facilities, and now there's waiting lists. So the key now is how to get this new wave, this new generation, if you will, of golfers into the game, into these private facilities comfortably, and also, wait for it, to retain them. Joining me for this conversation is someone who is well familiar with that topic. He is the Vice President of Partnerships for Capstone Hospitality. Please welcome Tyler Vandermeulen. Tyler, welcome to the 19th hole. How are you, my friend?
Michael, thank you. I'm doing very well. Doing very well. I'm honored to be on the show with you today. So thank you for having me on.
It is my pleasure, sir. It is my goal and endeavor to bring people who are smarter than me about topics that I'm interested in to talk about the show, thereby making us all better. So thank you.
I look forward to sharing my wisdom with you then, Michael. Absolutely.
There you go, my friend. So I'll start by saying, did you have any pushback or changes or edits to the preamble that I gave leading into this segment, where memberships and private and membership facilities were sort of at a low ebb during that period starting in 2008, and then you had this tidal wave that came in with the pandemic? Does that sound fairly accurate?
I would certainly agree that that falls within the guidelines, no question. To expand on that initially, we have seen a huge increase across the board at every club we've partnered with all across North America. And we've started to see it slowly return back to, you know, kind of what we expected. But I think that, you know, no one had the foresight to understand what was coming. 24 months ago, or a little bit longer than, believe it or not. Once COVID hit, we had no idea. No one knew. You know, some resorts and clubs had to fully close down. They had to follow guidelines and strict laws to make sure that they were practicing what they were supposed to. But we very quickly learned, you know, as it was proven, that golf was a safe place. So no question, ton of new golf and excitement, new golfers and excitement around the game. And country clubs were one of the few industries that, no question, certainly really kind of benefited, unfortunately, from what was obviously a national pandemic or an international pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult for people. But again, there was some silver linings, you know, to this dark cloud, and golf participation was one in particular. So if you look at who's coming to the golf courses, talk to me about these people, because I'm sure you've done some research and did some exploration into who these people are and what they want from a private facility. Are they folks who have come to the game and come straight into it in the via the membership experience, or have they graduated in a really short period of time from the municipal experience to saying, hey, we'd like a little bit more, or a little bit more thorough or complete experience? What are these people like, and what do they want from a membership facility?
That's a great question, Michael. I certainly think it's multi-pronged. When you factor in all the changes to everyone's lives the last 2 years, or a little over 2 years, as I've mentioned, we've had a lot of families that, you know, have moved from cities, metropolitan areas, for somewhere that's a little bit more slow-paced, you know, lower cost of living. And those families have definitely, you know, with moving cross-country, need to find ways to get involved in their new communities. So private clubs have made a ton of sense for them. But then you do also have a lot of people that, again, like you said, I think you add in kind of those things like Topgolf and Pop Stroke and all these wonderful kind of entry level and fun ways to engage people into the sport. And certainly doesn't hurt when you look on TV. And we've got the Open coming up this weekend. Tiger Woods is back in the field. And I would say very confidently, regardless of everything going on with LIV, that the young talent on the PGA Tour is as deep as it has been ever. So it's in a great spot. Clubs have definitely benefited from it. And as I mentioned at the beginning of this response here, we are starting to notice that our clubs across the country, it's starting to stabilize and return more to the pre-pandemic numbers. The last 2 years are certainly an anomaly when you look at membership sales.
Yeah.
But as you asked, how do you sustain it? How do you continue to attract those families and remain in the strong and stable position? And I've got a few ideas that I'd be happy to share with you in regards to that as well.
I'm sure you would. How can I say it? Well, I had a segment that I did for the National Golf Course Owners Association recently, a little article, when I wrote about what I call the Bushwood Syndrome, where you have the established golfers, the Judge Smales of the world, if you will, who run up against the Rodney Dangerfields of the world, right?
Absolutely.
And of course, that's obviously a very extreme and comic representation of that. However, there is some scaled-down version exists of that. When you have people who are well familiar in the game, maybe in their second, third generation at the club, and you have new members who come in with this sort of, hey, we just want to have fun here. How does your company help identify those situations and manage those situations for your clients?
That's a wonderful question, Michael. So I think one of the key components is really understanding the traditions of the club, understanding the culture of the membership, you know, what's been done, and how do they want it to continue. And that obviously can vary depending on if this is a member-owned equity club, privately owned club, a corporate owned club. So everyone, of course, has their own visions and goals that they'd like to see the club attain. But understanding, again, the marketplace that they're in, and overall identifying lead generators that will match up with the demographic that you're ultimately trying to recruit. One of those key points that I was just referencing earlier is, again, the attrition of your club. That's going to be a huge thing to watch at clubs all across North America. Again, there's almost 4,000 private clubs in North America. And those ones that don't have a huge entry fee, in terms of an initiation fee, say $5,000 or lower, you know, people don't have as much skin in the game. So unfortunately, those families might be a little bit quicker to go ahead and change their mind and say, you know what, we're, you know, little Timmy's playing soccer again and we're traveling more, whatever it might be. So there's a little bit more resistance there. and clubs have to be very strategic in how they engage from day one those members, whether that's through really solid programming, so whether it's adding new amenities. There is a crucial element for really key communication from the club, and that's another thing that we certainly consult with all of our client clubs on, is making sure that there's the appropriate amount of touches to make sure that those members are having endless opportunities to come to the club, create new memories, and of course spend a little money while they're there.
And spend a little money, exactly, because it's a, at the two ends of it. I mean, it is a business, and you have to deliver a quality experience, and you have to deliver it consistently when you're talking about a membership thing in particular, I believe. And in that sense, also deliver it for the entire family, many of which you may have different needs, right? You'll have a family that has a dad who just wants to play golf, and you'll have maybe a spouse who wants to, you know, experience the other things that you have at a country club. And then the youngsters who want to have more of a social thing. There's just a lot of balls in the air, and it's a very difficult thing to do, and I honestly would not do it. So I admire anybody who attempts to do it. We're talking to Tyler Vandermeulen. He's the Vice President of Partnerships for Capstone Hospitality. You're, of course, listening to the 19th Hole. Michael Williams, your host and Sherpa. I, Tyler, have never belonged to a private facility, a membership facility. I imagine you're a big fan of it, and you just alluded to the fact that there are many different flavors of it. And I think people, when they think of private, think of the ultra elite, you know, the Augustas and Oakmonts, and here in the D.C. area, Congressional and Columbia, things of those nature. But it's when you talk about membership facilities, there's a wide range of them. Sell me on the idea of membership. Why should I think about that? What are the benefits of that?
Yeah, gosh, I mean, I always, when I actually previously served as a director of membership at a handful of clubs before moving into this role. So what I always enjoyed most about that role was actually getting to know the prospective couple or family and understand what's important to them and have a very honest assessment of if our club aligns with what they're looking for out of a club. I personally would, again, rather be very coy and honest with someone and say, I'm not so sure that this is actually the right place for you. What I would recommend, Michael, is maybe you go check out, you know, Country Club XYZ right down the street. They've right. got maybe a little bit of a better alignment for what you're looking for personally. Mm-hmm. And I think when prospective members hear those type of things, when you're thinking big picture, you're taking the time to understand their interests and their families, and you're very polite and accommodating, they can appreciate, and I think their guard goes down a lot quicker. So I personally, Michael, would want to understand, you know, who else is going to utilize the club with you. Maybe, as I know, you're a very avid and good golfer, but who else is going to utilize it? Do you have a wife? Do you have kids? And what are their key interests, and where are they at, you know, age-wise and in their life of what they're looking to do? You know, then you can key in on, again, what amenities your club offers, and really at the end of it, sell them on the value of why they need to join the club and what it will add to their lifestyle.
Okay.
You know, whether that be business networking opportunities, whether that be the ways for kids to spend the summer and meet some more friends outside of who's in their class. Again, there are countless reasons why people join country clubs, aside from probably the most obvious of they have a great golf course or all my buddies belong there.
And I guess the other side of that is how you come to acquire a new client. Is it you reaching out to them and pointing out things where you can help them, or are you answering the bat signal for people who are saying, help, I've got this many people and I really don't know what to do?
Yeah, great question. Great question. I would say it's probably an equal amount of referrals. It's a small industry. So if we've had a general manager at a club that saw the impact that we've made and they've moved on to another club, and they are missing some of those key components to continue that maximum sales effort, they'll re-engage with us. Also, of course, you know, general managers like to speak about the success that they might have or have seen elsewhere. So that's certainly been a big route. And then certainly the old school method of reaching out to clubs and just trying to engage and create relationships, find out how that membership's going. And as we have mentioned at other points in the conversation, again, country clubs are at a very strong point right now, but they also need to be very proactive and deliberate in their approach on how they're going to maintain that success. So having a very multifaceted effort talking about selling a wait list, which is, gosh, what a hot topic that is right now for so many clubs that I think have dreamed of being on wait lists and didn't think that it would become.
Right.
And less than 2 years later, they're in a very strong position, assuming that they have, of course, gone about that the right way and received a financial commitment at signing. Again, a lot of things that we could dive 1,000 feet into, but overall, those are probably the key ways that we've continued to work with private clubs throughout the industry. And as I had mentioned to you before we came on, the thing that I get the greatest joy out of is, again, not only stabilizing clubs, but setting them up for long-term success. Mm-hmm. So they don't have those really hard decisions to make. They don't have to do incredible assessments to be able to maintain operating costs or wanting to do that big renovation, which, again, a lot of clubs have certainly, with the influx of members the last 2 years, decided to write some big checks and do some big projects, which, again, so long as they're done cautiously, I'm a huge, huge proponent of.
Gotcha. And I guess you just sort of set me up for the perfect segue for my final question when you talked about setting them up for long-term success. So I always say a good swing, everything happens in a good swing, important right before you take the swing. It's all about the setup. Without a good setup, not going to have a good swing, or very unlikely, right? Almost luck. So the setup, what do you see as the 3 or 4 things that really good private operations have or do to set them up for long-term success? Are there some, like, there are swing fundamentals? Are there operational fundamentals, 2 or 3 that you see in almost every really high quality operation?
That's a great question, Michael. Yeah, so again, in a twofold sense, from a sales perspective on how you set up long-term success, you continue to drive the demand for your product. So your outbound lead generators need to be ample, they need to be diverse, and you need to track them closely to see which ones are really producing that high quality member. So again, data driven, so that you can make all of your decisions from a very informed position. Again, making sure that you're continuing to do dues increases. You're doing a very honest assessment of the membership. We know clubs all across the country, if they don't have 45 categories right now, they did at one point, and there's still members on all those different levels. So when you're in these positions of power, you need to make sure that you're constantly going in and kind of bridging those gaps and bringing everybody back into the same categories. Continuing to increase your initiation fees. It's a conversation we have with general managers all the time. They go, well, things are working so well, why would we increase it? Well, things are working so well, we need to increase it.
Right.
We need to again, continue to create the demand and use that money for other key projects and reserves for around the club. So that's the sales piece of it. Operationally, I grew up, my first job was caddying and working at a cart barn. So unfortunately, I see every little thing still to this day when I walk onto a property. I think it starts at the top down. You know, if you have general managers and department heads that understand and keep in mind with every action that they do that these are paying members that are taking time out of their day to continue to, you know, support the club, and that it's a privilege that they've worked for so long, and you want to provide a first-class experience. Again, I think that covers the vast majority of it operationally. I know there's challenges right now, especially with hiring and retaining really good staff. So that's definitely a challenge across the industry, regardless of club stature. But I think when you look operationally at a club, it's just having very honest assessments and checkpoints to make sure that you guys are continuing the best practices. And whether that be through continuous and ongoing training, overly communicating. You know, one little tidbit that I will give all the membership directors out there that are listening, we always send out these code greens or POPs, P-O-P's, prospects on property. And that is a phenomenal way to make sure that all the department heads and staff are aware of prospective members coming on the property. So we would like to, you know, again, greet them properly by name. We'd like to already know if they have favorite drinks or favorite meals. We want to make sure that everyone's there so that you can create that really impactful first impression. Because again, whether you like it or not, that means a whole lot in the membership sales process.
Yeah, absolutely. As I've always heard, you know, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So all of those things, again, great fundamentals for people who want to get it right with their membership short-term and long-term. Hey, thanks so much, Tyler, for spending the time here. And I would love to have you back in more to sort of assess the situation going forward, give some people some advice, and maybe when people send in a couple of questions, I'll maybe have you do a Q&A with me or something like that, you know, because this stuff is good and important, and I'm so glad that you're doing such a good job with it.
Michael, it's a pleasure. Thank you again for allowing me to be a guest here on the 19th hole, and all the best to you as well. I look forward to reconnecting soon.
You got it, my friend. That is Tyler Vandermeulen, the Vice President of Partnerships for Capstone Hospitality. I would be remiss if I didn't mention some of the courses they've worked with. I mean, the Golf Club of Amelia Islands. We're talking about Marsh Landing, one of my favorite places. We're talking about all courses of Concert Golf Partners, and you've had those folks, we've had those folks on the show before. What a quality operation they are, all of their properties, Dormy Network. It goes on and on and on, and you can judge the quality of their work by the quality of their client list, and their client list is stellar. It tells you all you need to know. So whether you're looking for, as a club manager or a membership manager, to get help for bringing new members in and member retention, or if you're looking to join a club, maybe you want to start by looking at the Capstone client list and saying, maybe these are places that I want to go because I know that they care enough to bring in folks who want to give me the best experience. Either way, you can't lose. You're welcome. We'll take a break. Come back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. See you in a minute. That's it, and that's all for this edition of the 19th hole. I'm going to thank my very special guest, Tyler Vandermeulen of Capstone Hospitality, for dropping knowledge about the membership golf industry. Hey, look, if you're looking to join a club, join a facility, check out the Capstone website. You can also ask me. You know, I'm happy to give you some advice because you can find me on social media. Where you ask, I will tell you. At Twitter, on @MichaelOnTV, and on Instagram, Michael Williams TV. You should really, really, really connect, and I'm happy to answer your questions. Please do so. Operators are standing by. Again, thank you all for listening. This is a very special week in golf, and it's a very special week for me, and I'm glad you decided to spend some time and listen to this show to make it special for you. Until we meet again, please go out and play some golf, and when you do, hit some balls, hit them straight, but more than that, don't count the days. Make the days count. Michael Williams, 19th hole.